say, Bob, you and I doubled on that whole last transmission. I'm now hearing you very weakly. Want to repeat your message?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm running low power. Had a lot here over here in Hartford, Connecticut. But, yeah, what I was saying is that I don't know why they would go with a power. I know you said the calculations showed that they wouldn't need it, but, it's not working out. They should have just kept the same power they were running all the time. But anyways, hopefully new generation. I have a digital TV that's, I don't know what generation the converter is built into the new TV, but it's probably generation 3, so I'll probably have to get a generation 5 there.
Okay. Yeah, generation 3 to generation 5 will make some improvement. And many, many people who use over-the-air broadcast have an antenna that is, by modern standards, fairly inadequate for good UHF television reception. The antenna may not be in good shape, may not be a good brand, may not be a good design, may not be high enough to clear the local foliage and other obstacles, may have a feed line that's a 5 or 10 or 15 years old, minus 30 years old, and should have been replaced a long time ago. And flexible foam-filled cables will suck up water very slowly and drastically increase in their loss at the higher UHF frequencies. The higher frequencies suffer a lot faster than the upper VHF frequencies. So there's a combination of things going on. Very few people have a home antenna installation that is really up to modern standards on UHF. Very few. In fact, I can go walking around my particular community and I can no longer find a single rooftop antenna in my whole community of Dix Hills, Long Island, other than me. I'm the only guy with an operating antenna on the roof of my house that I can find. I didn't do an extremely extensive search, but in the last couple of years I've been keeping my eyes out. I haven't seen one. Everybody in my community is on cable, except me. I only get a notice in my mailbox once every day or two to sign me up for one of the three brand names of cable. The total amount of trees that have been burned to put all of that paper into my mailbox to try to sell me a cable TV service, wow. If I put all that paper in one pile, I could make one heck of a bonfire. Anybody with any further questions or comments, give me a call. It's K2RIW. Something Papa Whiskey. Go right ahead.
W2 Papa Whiskey. How do you copy?
W2 Papa Whiskey. Reasonably good. Start up your name and go right ahead with your question or comment.
Name is F-O-C-R-P-R-E-S, and I'm located in Bayshore. Dick, I've got a question for you. You mentioned that you've got iffy reception on WCBS. Could you compare your iffy reception on WCBS television digital to last week's reception of WPIX digital?
I think your name is Ben, and no, I cannot, Ben. I cannot make that comparison for a really dumb reason. I had almost no over-the-air UHF reception until yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, I think it was yesterday. I had a great big error in the way my house was wired, and so my outdoor UHF antenna was not in the system, and I wasn't aware of it. So I had no UHF reception except for a local channel that is 4 miles away from my house, a UHF television channel. So no, I can't compare. But I can tell you that Channel 2, as it's called now, which is really UHF Channel 56, correction, 33. It's UHF Real Channel 33. I'm getting very marginal reception. With a good antenna in a good location, my house is 300 feet above sea level, high by Long Island standards. I'm 33 miles from Empire State Building. When I climb my tower and I clear my trees, I've got line of sight to Empire. I don't have a good cable. A a good transmission line going to that antenna. And I'm getting very marginal so-called Channel 2 reception. Back to you, Ben. W2, Papa Whiskey, K2LYW.
Okay, Dick. Name is Pratt, Papa Romeo Echo Sierra. Well, the reason I ask is because I didn't know if WPIX has turned over their Channel 33 transmitter to WCBS, or if WCBS simply has a new transmitter on their prior 33 frequency now that they've gone back to 11. I had a very interesting experience tonight when I did the rescan. Actually, before I rescanned, I just turned the television on and was rotating through the channels, and when it hit 11, it thought about it for a moment and then said channel 2.1. So the TV that I've got, it's actually an Insignia brand, which is Best Buy's house brand. It has a internal APS-C tuner. It's a pretty cool, easy way to tune things. For example, if you just punch in, like, it didn't have channel 4. It didn't have channel 4. It missed it in the scan.
I heard you say it didn't have forward, missed it in the scan. We're listening.
WA5BJB.
Yeah, it looks like we've lost press. Go ahead, Ken. WA5BJB, K2RIW.
Yeah, okay, yeah, got through. Okay, I'm on the standards committee for over-the-air digital television reception set up by the Consumer Electronics Association. A lot of the guys involved in this in the beginning were PhD types, and they did all their calculations where precise dBs here, precise dBs there, with very little field work. After they started the first systems, I know the first high-definition TV in the Dallas area here went on full-time in 1999, so it's been on for 10 years. They found out that they had been a little optimistic, and they came back and told all the TV stations to increase power 6.8 dB, an interesting number, to boost up the power. I mean, you've got a very expensive transmitter, and I now suddenly need two. I may need a bigger feed line. My antenna may not be able to handle it. So boosting the power 3, 4, 5, 6 dB, when we're already talking about some serious power levels, is not inexpensive. And this was all federally mandated to begin with. We're back to, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. Mathematically, they have the same coverage. What you find out is you're now getting stations you couldn't get before, and you're not getting stations you used to get because the frequencies have changed. But you definitely need better antennas, help a lot. But they were very, very optimistic in their coverage. WA5BJB is the net.
Very fine, Ken. Ken, when I walk around my community, first of all, I see no rooftop antennas, but I go to a community that does have rooftop antennas. I've come to the conclusion that the vast majority of people on Long Island have, when they've got a rooftop antenna, over-the-air broadcast, they've got mediocre quality for VHF reception, but the vast majority of my visual impression is that the UHF antennas and the UHF section is in really bad shape, and I think a high percentage of those UHF antennas have a transmission line that's on average more than 15 years old. As such, since all flexible cable with foam dielectric is slowly absorbing moisture and therefore developing very high insertion loss, I am guessing that part of that 6.8 dB eye-opening that those guys had in the Dallas area is because they suddenly discovered that not only are the UHF antennas considerably lower in quality than anticipated for the average television viewer, but also multipath effects and local impulse noise and whatever is also contributing to the grief. That's a guess on my part. You can confirm or deny that I can. W85EJB with some delay. K2RIW in the TechNet.
W-H-Y-Y, I have a question in reference to the antenna height you were talking about before in Texas.
The most modern converters at the time, and with reference antennas. So they weren't even concerned. The numbers that they were doing for how much gain you had from a home television antenna, the references for the coax, all assumed factory fresh, perfect numbers. There was no particular pad in there. The 6.8 was just going over Longley Rice or general propagation numbers. The numbers were all very, very optimistic. In theory, and this was part of the headache, in theory, to get the same distance, you only need 17 dB less power for digital versus analog to get a good picture. So that means if it used to take 100 watts of analog, you can now get the same coverage with about 2 watts of digital. And under perfect conditions, that's true. But the real world isn't that digital. And in part, what we found was people are willing to watch some really horrible, fuzzy pictures that were pretty bad there. KQRIW in the group, WA5BJB.
If I understand you correctly, and Joe recognized, if I understand you correctly, Ken, the 6.8 dB is just correcting some of the mathematics before you get into the particulars of the real condition of the UHF antennas for the average citizen. Now, I'd like to believe that in the next few years, the average citizen is going to come to the conclusion that, hey, I can't ignore that antenna on the roof for the next 15 years just because it didn't fall down in the last ice storm or the last windstorm is not quite enough. It does need periodic maintenance of its transmission line, among other things. I'm about to replace the transmission line on mine, which I think might be 20 or 30 years old. And that's probably contributing to some of my grief. Although I'm still getting a large number of channels, I'm not getting a couple of the channels that I'm most enthusiastic about. Has anybody come to the conclusion of what the real number is, Kent? If 6.8 just corrects Longley Rice and other mathematics, and now when you add into that real multipath, real multipath degradation to the digital process, and real condition of the available UHF antennas, I guess the number is quite a bit bigger. Yes. That 6.8 dB increase over the first calculation. And I guess the government in this case is not going to ask for the extra power. It's just going to, in theory, very diplomatically tell each citizen, you have to make a bigger investment in the UHF antenna that's mounted on your chimney. That's a guess on my part. Back to you, Ken. W5BJB, K2RIW.
Well, people will continue to get local channels from down from the satellite, from cable. What happened is you used to get about, let's say, 20 stations. Now you again get 20 stations, but it's not the same 20 stations because of all the variabilities. They were there. They were definitely optimistic. And to tell the stations they can double power, a lot of them would find that very difficult and very expensive. They've already been thrown into incredible costs over this, and the whole plan originally was to sell off that spectrum for $1 trillion, which is how the federal budget was theoretically balanced in the 1990s, was by selling off the upper UHF channels. So they made 8,000 TV stations build a new transmitter. They made everybody in the United States get a new TV or a converter, and they had the auction, and the auction raised $19.2 billion. Oh, well. So much for federal bureaucrats thinking they know about business. K2RIW, WA5BJG.
If I did that calculation correct, are you telling me that they got roughly 2% of the money they anticipated to get when they sold off the spectrum? In a way, that may be right, though, Ken, if you think about it. In the past, on some of those frequency spectrum sales, somebody created a feeding frenzy, and some of the prices that were paid were a little bit excessive, and I'm not convinced that every one of the companies that paid the price in the past to buy spectrum had the resources to simultaneously buy the spectrum space, the frequency allocation, and establish the hardware, do all the advertising to establish the customers, and so on. I am guessing that a few of those early purchases of very expensive spectrum went bankrupt, or the project didn't turn out as intended. Somebody else had to resell it, so to speak. And that combined with the current downturn in the economy and the 9/11 incident, you put it all together, and I think sane companies today are not willing to pay as many dollars for the spectrum as they were in, let's say, 1990. Is that the part of what's going on here? W5BJB, KQRIW.
Well, politicians and lawyers determining what the value of a commodity is. The electronics industry in North America doesn't have $1 trillion to buy spectrum and then be left over to do anything. They would continue just using existing spectrum. You came up with fancier ways to use 2.4 gig or 5.8 gig rather than cough up $50 million to buy one TV channel or something. The numbers were horribly overinflated, and it was to apparently balance books. So they were highly motivated to overestimate what it is, and wow, created an incredible bureaucracy. Switch over. It would be nice if they can increase power. Perhaps the FCC will come back and say you have the option to increase power 3 dB if you want to. Some stations can do that fairly easily. A lot of them cannot because they're already running pretty close to the limits of their equipment. It's certainly made for a shakeup of the system. K2RAW, WJ5BJP.
Quite true, but when the shakeup is all over with, I think we're coming out ahead. Some people are going to have to establish a better UHF antenna and a better converter or a better TV set. But the average citizen is buying new TV sets every couple of years, and the total number of dollars required for a new UHF antenna may sound like a lot of bucks when you have a agency install it for you. What everyone forgets is what they're really paying for television reception today. There's a heck of a lot of people in communities close to where I live that by the time they buy all of the services, all the premium services for their cable, they're paying $130 a month. That's $1,500 a year. They don't look at it on a yearly basis. They look at it on a monthly basis and assume it doesn't add up any worse than that. So if they had to pay $150 to replace and improve the UHF antenna on their house, that's only 1 month's worth of what they're paying the cable company today. So I'd like to believe that more people will make that investment, those who desire over-the-air reception. I'm one of them. On top of that, if you play around enough, some of the experiments you've done, Ken, will lead a person to believe that in many locations, a very well-designed set of rabbit ears with a switching arrangement built inside, electronic switching, can do a medium good job of getting a digital television reception if you're close to the metropolitan area where the broadcasting is taking place. And we're hearing tell, let me drop, that more distributed broadcasting is going to be taking place in New York City. Multiple transmitters are going to be set up on the exact same frequency, a little bit like the European process. Now, the European process, which you were also doing the evaluation of some number of years ago, the COFDM, which Europe settled on, I think is a little bit more compatible with distributed transmission as opposed to point source transmission. And I had the impression from the experiments you were running with your colleagues that 8VSB, the system that we chose, is a little bit less compatible with distributed transmission. But maybe I'm misquoting you on that one, Ken. WA5BJB, K2LIW.
Well, COFDM has its own sets of problems. One motorcycle with a noisy spark plug going down through an English village turns off all the television sets. It is incapable of dealing with impulse noise, and they have not come up with a solution for that. One spark plug popping, and everything has to resync on the TV, so you get a much longer delay from that. No, they've done very, very good with the APSB. They had some demonstrations where they have the on-channel repeater, and you're holding a little television set with a very good picture, and you look down at the bottom, and it tells you which transmitter. You walk across the street, you see absolutely no change in the picture, but you look down at the bottom, and you're now listening to a completely different transmitter. It's very, very good the way they're handling the synchronization. And the adaptive equalizer will switch from one to another very, very seamlessly. So like a cell phone system, they will be able to go back into, say, Long Island and put a half dozen transmitters, all transmitting on the same UHF channel, all carefully synced in timing. And it's not that they're synced together, they're synced offset. Can now get a complete distributed system. 8DSB modulation works very fine with that. K2RIW at WA5BJB.
Fascinating. Okay, so if the 8VSB distributed transmission with frequency offset between the individual transmitters, low power repeaters I'm going to call them, if that works, give me a rough guess, Ken. How many kilohertz of offset is required? And what's the economics like? In other words, if I was CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System, in New York City, and I want to start investing in a whole lot of distributed individual low-power stations, is the number of citizens that are fed good television, or the number of square miles that I cover, no matter how I rate it, when I have distributed transmission, I have the impression the economics turns out favorable because of the way the inverse square law works, very similar to the cell phones. If I had to make a cell phone reliable over a 50-mile range, it would require tremendous resources because you only have to work over a 5-mile range. The individual transmitters and receivers can be a hell of a lot simpler, but I need more of them. But I think economically you come out ahead. So is the cell phone philosophy going to be similar economics, which comes out favorable for distributed television transmission as opposed to very high power, long range point source transmission? Kind of curious about that mathematics.
Hey, Dick, the concept in New York?
Yeah, go ahead, give us a couple words on that, Eric.
The concept for New York is to fill in the hole, the places in between buildings like Sister and Spots Uptown and a few other places where you get nothing. And the concept is to light those places up.
Okay, are those going to be 1-watt transmitters or are they going to be 100-watt transmitters? That makes a big difference in the dollars. And my guess is when you run a 1-watt transmitter, you don't need that humongous adjacent channel power ratio protecting filter. Over to you, Eric.
So for what they're experimenting around here with is multiple stuff. There's 1,000-watt transmitters, there's 100-watt transmitters. At least that's what I'm aware of at this point.
So you're saying the central broadcast center at the top of Empire is in numbers like 1,000, but these dead spot fill-in transmitters are like 100? I'm amazed that it's that high. And at the 100-watt level, I suspect that that humongous filter is still required. Back to you, Eric.
Now, when I talk to the guy who's working on it, who actually writes for the broadcasting and the TV technology, actually, He also is the NBC guy. I'll find out exactly what they have in mind, but I know that they're putting some small transmitters in a few places to fill in a hole. Plus, they're using a phase array on top of Times Square to fill some big holes.
I'm amazed that that many watts are required. These hole fill-in transmitters, what's a rough guess? Are they trying to cover 1 mile or 10 miles? Over to you, Eric.
Well, the first experiments are local, so you're looking at like 10 miles or 5 miles, something of that nature. At least that's what they're attempting at this point. But this is the beginning, so we'll see what it winds up being.
Okay, let's see if Kent wants to add anything to this. WA5BJB, K2RYW in the TechNet.
K2QIQ.
K2RW, WA5BJB. There's no frequency offset. It's all time offset. They do some interesting synchronization games in time to allow it to seamlessly drop over. But I'm going to have if I'm going to pull in the signal, process it, clean it up, maybe buffer it, retransmit it. The difference between a 1 watt, 10 watt, and a 100 watt transmitter is not very much percentage-wise, but they are looking at it pretty much like you said, hole fillers. You're on a big high spot there in Long Island. You might want to put these on the other side of the hill from where you are to fill in back behind there. Or as you said, you got buildings you can feed, fill in various other low areas. I don't know that there's plans to put massive numbers of them in a ring around the main transmitter to increase the coverage area, but that would be an option. But it's done with synchronization, and the difference between a 1 watt, 10 watt, and 100 watt, and the total cost of putting that system out there is insignificant. K2RYW, WA5BJB.
Okay, darn interesting. A little different than I expected. KC2QIQ, you got it, Glenn.
Hi, Dick. I just wanted to mention I was just interested in building an antenna for the higher VHF area, and I was just searching the internet here, and I think I just bought an antenna online, and it's a WineGuard that covers both the VHF, UHF, and also FM radio. Very interesting antenna. It's a Vanguard 8200U antenna. I don't know if anybody else has seen it out there, but it seems to guarantee at least 82 miles on the VHF spectrum for high definition and at least 50 miles on the UHF spectrum, which is higher than I've seen on a lot of these antennas so far.
What's the
approximate?
A2YYY. Joe recognized, but before we go back, Glenn, what's the approximate dollars and what's the approximate size of that puppy?
Right now, the price on Amazon.com is $189.99, and just trying to get an overall dimension on it. It's fairly large. I mean, it's it looks like actually like one of the old series antennas that was for like analog TV, but very very large, like the old Turk antennas. And large ones you can get from Radio Shack. So I'm trying to actually get a dimension on it.
It sounds like it's 8 or 10 feet long. The ding-dong I heard in the background makes it sound like you're at a gas station. That can't possibly be true. Is it, Greg?
Well, that's actually my printer telling me I'm printing out my invoice.
Very good. Joe, you've got it. It's A2RYY, K2RYW.
I believe that antenna is the same thing as what I had one of those years ago. It's a CH6600. It's a pretty long antenna. It's pretty long and it's pretty wide. Unless you really want to get some DXTV, there's nothing around here you're going to really find that's below channel 7. So if you look for channel 7 and above, I have an HD, 7698P, I believe is the model number that's made by WineGuard. A lot cheaper. About $123, I believe I paid for it, maybe $129 with shipping or something like that. But it's a lot cheaper antenna, and it's more boom, 160 68 inches, something like that, end-to-end, and is designed high-gain, deep fringe for channel 7 to 13 and 14 through 69. So that probably is what you're looking for to do what you need to do.
Okay, so you like the Hotel Delta 7698 Papa, made by Weingott, $123, channel 7 through 69, I'm going to call it, 168 inches long. Whee! I think that's like 13 or 14 feet. And it doesn't go down to channels 2 through 6. I'm amazed. That's a biggie. There's a lot of elements there just for the upper VHF plus UHF. Unfortunately, when I was about to ask you what gain do they claim, and there I know we're in trouble. Every one of these television antenna manufacturers, when they tell you on UHF channel 30 it's going to give you X number of dB gain, I think they're only optimistic by about 7 dB. I'll back to you for any comments on that one, Joe.
I think I sent you the paperwork on this previously. We've had some discussions about this before. I believe the antenna has a gain of like 17, 18 dB gain, something like that. And maybe it's a little higher or possibly lower on the UHF channels. And they also make a matching companion preamp, I think an AP8275, which gives you about 28 dB gain on VHF and UHF, but it's not a continuous one band to the other type of operation. It goes from like channel 2 through 13, and then drops out and picks back up around 470, gives you the UHF channels. It's kind of like a filter in between it.
Dick, I've got the information on this antenna.
Okay. From what Joe just said, 17 or 18 dB of gain, even if that's over ISO. I do not believe it. Kent and I and others who have really tweaked the living daylight about a single frequency long Yagi antenna, we have a vague idea of what's required to get 17 or 18 dB of gain over ISO. As I remember, when I looked at the data sheet, it said gain of a dipole, which really out of this world. 17 or 18 dB of gain over ISO requires, I think it's something like 25 elements carefully tuned to that particular one frequency. And to do that across all those UHF channels, I'm getting very skeptical. And the beam which you would get out of an antenna like that would be around 15 or 20 degrees of total beam width. And you look at the patterns they give you, and you get beam widths that are two or three times those numbers. So, and the beam width is a necessary but not sufficient. It's got to be there to get that amount of gain. So their gain numbers are very optimistic. KC2QIQ, KQLIW, go ahead, Glenn.
Okay, here's the information that they give you on this. Product dimensions, 168.2 inches by 110 inches by 33 inches, 15.2 pounds. Shipping weight is 16 pounds, probably a little bit of cardboard inside there, and that's the model HD8200U. I can't find anything inside here that talks about gain at all, but they do talk about things in terms of miles, and right now, this is, right now, as far as anything I can see out there, this is probably the farthest reaching antenna. I figured if you were going to throw something up on your tower with a rotator, boy, this would be kind of neat. I'm going to try it here first, so I'll let you know. KC2QIQ.
That is 14 feet long, 168.2 inches. 14 blanking feet. Whoa! What a monster. But some of that is covering lower VHF, which I guess if you want to start television DXing the low-power repeater stations and whatever that are still on the air, that's possible. But for the average guy to rotate 14 feet of boom as a television aerial, which normally doesn't get the prime spot on the radio tower. The ham equipment gets the prime spot, and the television aerial gets the secondary or tertiary spot. So to rotate 14 feet of boom...
Does the Weingart have a truss?
Even if the Weingart has got a truss. I'm just talking about the turn radius of that thing. 168 feet long, 110 inches wide. That probably means it's got about a 9-foot turning radius. And for some people, that's going to be a little bit healthy. Joe wanted to add to all of this. W2RYY, go ahead, Joe. KQRYW.
Yes, it does have a truss.
That's probably part of what makes it 33 inches tall.
Yep. I believe I cite all this literature at one time or another, the spreadsheets, I think, in PDF form of the amplifier and a particular model antenna that I have. That's what I'm using right now, and I get quite adequate reception with it.
Are you getting all the channels you would like to get? 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, the new digital, 21, and so on. Are there any missing channels from your point of view, Joe? Go ahead.
Answer, yes. I cannot see channel RF channel 18 all the time, cannot see RF channel 8 all the time. All the other channels I get all the time. I never could get channel 61. I only got that once on a band opening, but I was able to get all the other UHF channels all the time. They rarely would go out, even in heavy rain and that type of thing. I guess the pixelation happened with the picture, but I would always get a picture. It would always be there, like 95% of the time. Now that some of the channels are down to VHF, I'd say I rated on the signal strength meter about 90-95% for channels 7, 11, and 13. So how's that for gain?
Not bad, but you're not getting 9, and we sort of understand that one. Are you getting what claims to be channel 2 and 4 and 5?
I'll say it again. I get all the New York channels, whether they're on VHF or UHF. I'm not missing any channels at all.
Wow. What's your guess as the approximate number of channels you're getting, Joe?
I can get channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13 out of New York. I can get 21, obviously. 25, 31, 41, 47, 67, 68, channel 55. Those are the channels I get all the time. RF channel 8, which is DT58, I get that intermittently. I get channel 50 intermittently, which I think is further west of New Jersey. I think it's from on Garrett Mountain, out in Patterson, I think things where they're broadcast. So I don't get them all the time. And there's a few other channels that come and go occasionally as the band's propagation changes. But the stuff in New York, I am getting all the time.
Yeah, 50 is NJN, WNJN. And I get that one intermittently also. You're doing better than I am. I need a new cable, I know. Okay, you got a good slew of them there. You're a little closer to New York City, and you also on the South Shore, I think, have a little bit better view of New York City. I've got to go through some hills that are west of me. Okay. Anybody with any further questions before we finally go to the mailbag? Give me the call letters right now, KQRIW.
Okay, do you have a question before? This is a simple formula I've heard for what we talk about antenna height and all that kind of stuff. You tell me how this formula seems to play true as far as in the real world. There's a formula I heard a long time ago. With basic range of a antenna to distance the horizon is basically like 2D, and then you take the square root of that. Like, say, example, Empire State Building is about approximately 1250 high. You double that, you get 2500, take the square root of that, it becomes 50. So that's like your rule of thumb type of indication of what your range is going to be. That's why I was curious when Ken said he's on top of like a 1300 foot tower. It sounds great for 6 meters, but it still has a certain finite range to the horizon, doesn't it?
That formula is extremely good. You got it right. And he was at 1600 feet is the height of the broadcast antenna he was using. It's a channel 2 broadcasting antenna designed for 54 to 60 megs, and he was using it at 50 megs as well as a couple of others. He's used it on 2, 220, and 432, and maybe 1296. 1,600 feet tall. That's a serious tower. It's hard to recognize the objects on the land when you take a picture from up there, and you showed me what it looks like from up there. But yes, because of the square root phenomenon, you would like to think that every time you double the height of the tower, you're going to get twice as much range. That's not the way Earth curvature works. You get a 41% increase every time you double the altitude. And when you're starting to get numbers like 1,000 and 2,000 feet, doubling doesn't come easy. So that's the right formula, Joe. Let's let it drop all the way, and then Mel's going to pick up if there's no burning issues that we should cover, and Mel's going to tell us how much flack he got in the mail this week. K2KEY to take it with a full delay drop. K2YYW in the deck now.
This is K2KEY. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Boy, oh boy. This digital television. Oh, I don't know. I got involved already, and I see it wasn't the right thing to do already. I got a couple of phone calls already that being accused of ruining their television sets and everything like that. Oh, well, okay, I guess tomorrow I'll be playing around with this again tomorrow. Just what I didn't need, but trying to be the right guy and doing the right thing and shit at it. It can get you into problems. Let's see, what do I have here? I'm just looking over to see if I can find something that's pretty quick, Dick, over.
Yeah, part of what's going on here, in my opinion, Mel, is that people have a whole lot of brand new hardware. The remote control on these digital converters, the learning curve to find all those menus, to properly program stations, to find those stations, to go between the stations, there's a lot of learning curve for somebody who's not very computer literate. A guy who's very computer literate can punch those keys on a keyboard and make it do all kinds of magic in milliseconds. In fact, a guy who's skilled at a keyboard will never tell you what to do. He says, it's too slow, let me do it for you, which means he's not teaching you, which means it's got a long learning curve. So these people are frustrated by the equipment, and they're taking it out on you. I'm pretty convinced, Kent, Mel, it is not personal. You're just hearing the level of their frustration. And after you leave, and it's working when you leave, they punch the buttons and it doesn't do what they want, and they think they can blame you. Well, consider the source. They're in a huge learning curve. We're going to be gnashing teeth for a couple of weeks before this all settles out. In the big picture, I think we're going to come out ahead. In the beginning, it's going to look like a pretty dark picture. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger. Well, I can say I just got this one lady that I knew there was going to be a problem, especially because I couldn't unify the hand units to use one hand unit. In other words, the cable, the TV set to turn it on and off. You're still going to have to use the one hand unit, original hand unit, of course, one for the converter box, and I knew it was going to be a problem with this situation. I told the daughter, and I got a call from the mother that she's very upset. That's why I did this through the television. Now she has almost nothing. And, I had to go back and call the daughter again. And she says, now I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do with this. So this is the situation. This is a very difficult thing, especially the older people, and I know there's going to be marginal reception at different times, especially when the weather conditions get crazy, you know, with a lot of rainy days and things, and snow. I have a feeling that it's going to make things even worse, Dick, over.
Yeah, she's probably in the same situation I'm in. I think there's a way I can program the one handheld unit to control both my set and the converter. I haven't done that. I'm still in the experimental stage. Sometimes I tune my television set to channel 3, and I have the converter playing into channel 3. That means I got to get on channel 3 on the main television set, and if anyone else in the house picks up the set and tries to change the channel on the set with its remote control, of course they get nothing but noise. I got to use the first control for the set to control the volume. You could control the volume on the digital converter. And the digital converter has got a zillion buttons on that remote control. And I think there are ways of consolidating it, but I'm flipping back and forth between channel 3 reception, through mode analog reception, just to see what else is going on. And then I also use auxiliary 1 mode, where the direct composite video. Video, a total of 3 cables, left, right, and video, are being converted between the digital converter box and the television display. So I'm running on 2 controls, and right now I'm the only person in the house that knows how to use the two controls. The others have basically said, too complicated, don't want to go there. So they call me when they want to watch television, or when they want to change the channel. Can you imagine? I'm thinking I'm living in a high-tech house, people with doctorate degrees, and I have to change the channel for them, Mel. And these are not older folks. These are people my age, young people. K2LIW.
Lovely, lovely, huh? Well, this is a situation now. I'm dealing with this lady that's on an age. And no, I couldn't simplify it. I looked in the book and everything. That particular TV set just won't go with the hand unit from the converter box, the new hand unit. So I knew it was going to be a situation that they're going to take it. I said, don't do anything but touch the power button, you know, on the original remote to turn it on and off the TV set. And I had a feeling that that showed it to her, explained to her. Daughter was there explaining to her, mom, look. Oh, okay. 2 minutes later, it was the same situation. Oh, I'm sorry. And then took it off channel 3. And why channel 3? There's nothing on channel 3. I never watched channel 3. Why should I watch it now? No, you're not going to be watching channel 3. You're going to be watching it this thing. So why do you keep telling me channel 3 for? And this went back and forth. I'll tell you something, Dick. Haven't heard the end of this. I think I'm going to take a vacation, to tell you the truth. And of course, I got a huge amount of mail. Still giving us the feedback from that business that we were talking about last week about the future of the electronics industry in this country. Over.
On the first subject, Mel, let me make a suggestion to you. There are other people who know that the electronic genius on your street happens to be a guy named Schneider. So they're going to be looking for you. As you enter the door to try to help them, there's going to be other people asking you for your help. The best you can do is tell them ahead of time that what they're about to enter into, that in the beginning it's going to be frustrating. There's going to be a big learning curve. There's a big technological change that has just taken place. You did not cause it. You're going to try to help. But if you tell them ahead of time, it's going to be tough. The learning curve is going to be significant. In the beginning, buttons are going to be pressed and the television is going to look like it failed. Nothing's going to burn up, nothing's going to be damaged, but it's going to look like it ain't working. If you tell them ahead of time, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. You'd like to believe that you can convert the television set so that everything works on one remote control. Well, in many cases, it ain't going to happen. And even if it does happen, it ain't going to happen for all the functions. So you're entering into an experiment in frustration. That's a given. If you tell them up front, they'll have a little bit less blame for you. This is one case where there ain't no glamour fix, as I see it, Mel. Unless you're working with somebody that's very computer literate, there's no glamour fix in this case. It's going to be a long, hard slosh. What did our Secretary of Defense used to say? Long, hard slug? You know what I mean. This one ain't going to be simple. K2KEY, K2RAW.
Roger. Well, no doubt, because I did go slow, and I only did this because I happen to know this lady's daughter that asked me, please, Mel, need a little help here. And so I got involved, and wound up, spent a lot of time and everything the other day, and I see we're not finished yet. So here we go again. All right. But yet a learning curve. These people, they have just gotten used to using the hand unit, basically the hand unit. And in fact, they have been having trouble consistently using the original hand unit on the TV set. And now we add the second one in from this converter box. And this situation, and let me tell you something. This is going to be, I just don't know. You're going to have the, as they say, the patience of the saints to get people to understand this. I mean, you know, after a while, you feel it's start to get to you, but I have no answers. So, well, who knows? I just I'm getting, you know, sort of as they say, antsy with it already, Dick. Over.
Yeah, but you now know what's coming, Mel. Not only that one lady you helped, there's going to be other people who are going to ask for your help. You're the electronic wizard on Dover Street. Therefore, they're going to come to you. So there's going to be others. And the best you can do is tell them it's going to be tough. Hang in there. That eventually this will get ironed out. It'll become simpler. And maybe if they bought a brand new set, some of these functions will become automatic. But even the brand new set, with its great big user's manual and its great big remote control that's only got about 25 buttons, not counting the menus. Have you seen what some of the new, really elaborate television sets look like with the remote control? My goodness. You almost have to hold the thing in two hands. You almost need a hand cart to wheel it out, Mel. So it's going to be tough. There's just no getting around that. Now that you know that's happening ahead of time, ordinarily, you're a guy that's got a lot of feelings, and when somebody's in trouble, you feel for them. Well, in this case, you're going to have to psychologically disconnect a little bit, because it's going to be a given that they're going to be angry at first. When you don't have control of the stuff that you own, the stuff that's in your living room, and an older person might really be hooked on some particular soap opera, and they want to watch that particular soap opera at noon. And if they can't get it, they're going to scream and holler at everybody that's around them. It's a given. Don't let it get to you, because you know it's coming. K2KEY, K2RAW.
Well, the worst part of this, Dick, and this was the thing that I really couldn't get over to this lady at all. How are you going to explain this business of having 4-1, 4-2, 4-3, 4-4, 5-1 jumps to channel 9-1 and back and forth like this? How do you go about explaining this to older people with all this? I don't know how they came up with this stupidity that if they were going to have 4-1, they should have made it to something. Just don't make it 4-1. Come up with some number. All right, you want to even do that B, A, B, or C or something. But, gee, go tell them that 4-1 or 4-2 means channel 4. Well, 42 is now 4. You know, this to me was the stupidity of this thing, you know. This adds more confusion than anything. I don't know how you're going to get this over with this sub-biz numbers over.
I'll admit it would have been a little bit easier if they called it 4A, 4B, 4C. And for the really technically inclined, they could have called it 4 Alpha, 4 Bravo, 4 Gamma. Don't go there. The best and by the way, the people in my house also had trouble with that. Because you and I, as scientifically oriented people, put a lot of emphasis on the decimal point. You move something one spot on the decimal point, and you and I say, you changed it by an order of magnitude, 10 to 1. For two decimal places, you change it by 100 to 1. We put a lot of emphasis on the decimal point. Normal humanity says, hey, that's a spot of dirt. It doesn't mean anything. The best explanation I've come up with is it's a little bit similar to the Dewey Decimal System for the way you number the books in a library. It's a little bit like the Dewey Decimal System. To somebody that knows something about libraries, it might help a little bit. In the case of my wife, who knows a lot about libraries, that cleared it up for her. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, no, it's not going to happen in this case. This is not for these people that I am talking about. They are quite on in age, and to them, it's... as they say, rocket science. This is beyond their capabilities of trying to explain to them. They just barely got used to using the TV set before, you know, they had the original TVs where they knew they went up and knew how to turn. Oh, well, a couple of them, how they told me, why can't I have a TV set? You should turn the knob and turn to the channel. You know, make it louder, make it lower, you know, and things like that. They knew that. And then now all of a sudden now they wound up, they had to get a new TV, and one lady was, she was saying to me, she says, what did they do to me? The old set plays wonderful. The old set, Vic, she was watching Bailey and Image on the Don thing and all, but the horror's perfectly well. Now, kids bought her a new set, and that took her God knows how long to learn how to use it with it, because it's all on the hand unit, whereas the other one was all, you know, strictly manual controls in the front, and now she finally learned to use the hand unit. Now I'm going to stick this, now we got this new thing added over.
Yeah, on your final, I'm curious as to how close to your house does this lady live? Maybe it's your next door neighbor or two doors away. Somebody you've known for a lot of years, and you know the younger members of the family. And you're the electronic wizard on Dover Street, and they want you to fix it all. We got about 2 minutes left. For those who stuck in there this long, to me it was educational. This was TechNet number 1249 of the series that began in September of 1982, would you believe? 26 and a half, 27 years ago. If I got the numbers right, yes, I think I do. Mel and I will probably be back next week. Unfortunately, digital television will be one of the subjects next week. It's this is a big chunk of electronics that's really important in an awful lot of people's lives. So we're going to be discussing, we'll sneak in some ham radio, but there's going to be some digital in there. I'll warn you guys, 73 you all, be kind to each other, and go easy with those people that are on that great big ugly learning curve on how to use their new remote control. K2RIW clear, K2KEY to take it.
No, they're not living here on Dover Street. This happens to be some of the people that are living over in Brighton, some of the senior citizens over there. And there's a whole thing. I tell you, they're most likely, if they said there are 100,000 complaints or call in, I think maybe 50% or more originate right from that area there. So they haven't got the old buildings. They're not wiring them for cable or anything of that such. It's not going to happen there. And the reception has been always mostly on rabbit ears, indoor antennas, and all. And oh, I don't know. I just tell you the truth. I just happened to get involved because I happen to know the daughter of this lady, that friend of ours, and begged me, please, need help. And I think that they say that proverbial can of worms. All right. Well, we'll do our best. 73 is all. Oh, by the way, I looked for you today at the Ham Fest, Limark's Ham Fest, but I guess you didn't make it. So we didn't get to discuss that, but all right. We'll try to get back to ham radio eventually here. This is K2KEY.
Yeah, my son came out this weekend and wanted to spend some time with me. So I didn't get a chance to go. Sorry about that. And I probably in the last week or two told you that I'm likely to go. Oh, well, bye-bye for now. And rough number, was a medium good attendance on that flea market today from your point of view, Mel?
I mean, the best I've seen in Wild. Nice, a lot of people showed up as far as both attendance and vendors over.
Okay, glad to hear it. Sounds like I missed out on some good deals. Bye-bye for now. See you next week.
The time is 12 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Net tonight at 8:30.
K2RIWIW 7HTL.
Reflector 9126. Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector, 912.
Channel 6.